turn this on and get it going.
Okay.
Today's date is January the 7th, 1999, and I'm with Mr. James Phelps. And I guess, Jim, let's kind of start from the beginning. Just tell a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in Hyndman.
Okay. I've been in graduate school at the University of Kentucky and had completed one degree and was actually working on another when funding ran out. And I started looking for work. And at that particular time, which was in the fall of 72, the job market was very, very grim. There were hardly any jobs at all. I think I had 200 plus applications going at one time. And I met one of my friends named Ron Ketchin, who was one of my 4-H companions from earlier years. And he told me that there was a possibility with the Extension Service and for me to go for an interview. I went to the main office in Lexington, set up an interview with them, and they explained to me there was two possibilities. One was in Pikeville and the other was in Hyndman, but they thought that the Pikeville position wasn't going to be available for much later. So I started the interview process. I arrived here for an interview on the 5th of February, 73, and I came on the field on February 26, 73. I knew about Hyndman.
It turns so easy.
Okay.
I feel like it's your voice. That works fine.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I knew about Hyndman from some class studies from elementary school, and I knew a little bit about the settlement school, but it was fairly limited.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came here, they gave me a room at Westover, just across the way here, and then stored all my things in Miss White's apartment, old apartment. And then later on, when there was problems in the room I was in, I got moved into the main apartment. After we got some things organized, so I had some space.
Yeah. Now, where were you from originally?
Okay, I'm from Somerset, Kentucky.
Okay.
I grew up in Pulaski County on a small farm, truck crops, tobacco, livestock.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Berea College, graduated from high school in 63, and was at Berea until... Actually, 68, it took me longer than 4 years to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And then at UK before I came here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the oldest of 12 children. And my dad and mom, my mom always worked at home, but my dad worked as a warehouse foreman from 48 till almost by the time he passed away. Plus, he was also an electronics technician.
Okay. It's a big family.
Yes. Four boys and eight girls.
Yeah. And so you came to Hyndman. Now, when you came for this job, what job did you come to do?
Okay, this was actually like an experimental job that Lionel Duff had worked with Bill Francis and some other people. I think the Extension Board and Benny Dyer, to the best of my knowledge, was the person that was working with that. And they wanted to have a person working with youth here, but there was not enough money in the budget for it. And so they looked for collaboration with an organization to do that, and that organization happened to be the Settlement School. And it was for a 6-month probationary period, and then I was to be reviewed and either yes or no at the end of 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically how it started. I was the first person to work full-time with youth. We had other people that had worked. Aggie Mullins had worked with that project before, but she was like an intern type position.
Okay.
And other extension agents obviously had worked with youth work, but I was the first full time. And I think $2,000 was part that the settlement school paid, plus the living here, and then the extension board paid the rest.
Okay. So when you say working with youth, was that the 4-H program then, or was that merely you were here to work with the youth at the school?
Okay. What the assessment was that I was to work with 4-H programming.
Okay.
Everything from small community clubs, like an example would be at Caney Creek with the Baptist Church over there. They had the Caney Clovers program. That would be an example of that. And then we had a number of other satellite programs at Irishman and Decoy, Clear Creek,
mm-hmm.
Just to name a few. They were all community-based type programming. They did challenge me to start working with the schools. That was something that had not been done before to any great extent.
Right.
Pat DeCourcy had worked with a number of the schools before in a limited basis, but obviously not full-time jobs, you can't do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So my challenge was to integrate 4-H programming within the schools and to build especially programs like camping, doing project work, demonstrations, and activities were some of the challenges. And where the settlement school came into play was to, a lot of times you had to get kids from one place to another.
Yeah.
And the van became a very, very important part of that process. So those are the nitty gritty of the challenge. And of course you're faced with many, many problems along the way.
Yeah.
And you reevaluate and go back and try again.
Mm-hmm.
But we're continuing to this very day to work within school programming, which is a little bit unique within youth programming as a whole, but it is a legitimate part of 4-H youth work.
Yeah. Okay, so in those early years, as you said, you came here, you started working and going into the schools and working with these youth programs. Now, I know just from knowing you all my life and talking about different things, did you ever live in the boys' dorm, maybe help with that some?
I definitely did.
Okay.
Okay, when I first came here in Westover, I was technically in the boys' dorm.
Mm-hmm.
And when I could be here at night, I was to be the more like the supervisor, and if there was a problem, to let the appropriate person in charge know. And they would come in on Sunday afternoon late, and I would be more or less on duty when I got back from church in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I could be here in the evening, I helped with that too. The other thing was to actually help coordinate their schedules, and that included dishwashing duty and all this kind of thing.
What was that? That's something I'm interested in finding out about. What was that like? Because I've gotten perspective, of course, the very early years and even mm-hmm. up to the 60s, and so now we're getting into the 70s when there aren't as many students here.
There was about 30,
right.
30 to 33,
okay.
I can remember.
How did you, I guess, what were your duties with that, with organizing okay. dishwashing schedules
well,
and things?
Breakfast was around 7 a.m., if I remember correctly. I know at least I came over probably a quarter to 7, and the students would get here, and the cook would have breakfast ready, and they would eat, and they would hurriedly wash the dishes, and then they had to be off. They had to get to school.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of them, school was just walking across the bridge to the old Hyman High School. Of course, they were there during the noon hour. They would be back here in the evening. And in addition to supervising them when they were washing dishes, Mrs. Earp helped with a thing which was like a study hall in the evening.
Oh, okay.
And I'd be available to answer questions when they were doing their homework and things of that nature. Sometimes on Sunday evening, Mrs. Earp had a program she called Christian Education, and she would do that, and I helped her with a number of programs. And we usually did that in the Great Hall. And that would be after that they'd had dinner. The only other duty that I can remember basically was to check out their dormitories. And I guess one of the amusing things was that these kids were constantly hungry.
Yeah.
And trying to control, snacks were no big deal in their little rooms or whatever, but sometimes they made an attempt to get into the food supplies in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'd say so. Boys, they want to eat all the time.
Yeah, it was mostly boys that did that. Of course, I did not deal with the girls. And right now, I can't think of who the lady was that helped. Jean Jackson at one time helped with the girls. But it was an interesting experience. And I look back on it and see some of those young people now that have grown up and meet them on the street or whatever.
What was dorm life like? Was it? Did you have any problems? Or
The biggest problem was trying to get them to bed at night. And then they wanted to sleep. We actually had a TV over there.
Oh, really?
There was at that time there was limited cable service, and there was a TV over there. And it was a battle sometimes to get them to go to bed and leave the TV, and a battle to get them up in the morning. Sometimes you'd have to rouse them up to three times, and the old shower over there was something else. But it's and the knocking noises and the plumbing as the showers ran, and of course the kids would fuss because of the water. With the sulfur smell. And there would be times when there would be hurt feelings or disagreements, and sometimes I tried to smooth over those, but a lot of times you just had to be diplomatic about getting them to do things like that. So that, in a nutshell, sort of like what it was like. They were required to keep the rooms clean, keep their beds made up, and at least, for the most part, keep their clothes hung on the right. They didn't have a lot of closets. They had racks where they put their clothing. And then there were times when the kids had to take stuff to the laundry if need be, not always. And they would pack up on the weekend on Friday afternoon, and they, as soon as they got home from school, they'd rush, and I guess parents or whatever would be here to meet them, and they'd rush home for the weekend. So that from late Friday afternoon until late Sunday afternoon.
Did anybody, were there kids that stayed here on the weekends?
There were some that could, especially the kids over around Decoy that couldn't always get home because that big steep hill was, when it would get mud, it was terrible. And so they would stay here quite often, especially in the wintertime. When they were here, I'd have to go with them because one a staff member or an adult had to be with them when they went to the ball game, and there were ball games.
Oh, really?
Very frequently, yes, over in the gymnasium.
So somebody from here would go? Just
yes, we traded. Another little errand we had to do with them is that once a week they were allowed to go to the dairy bar. And you would, I'd load up the van with them, and we'd go up to the dairy bar up on 160. And they looked forward to that. They would, that was Thursday night that they got to do that. And of course they got to go go home on Friday afternoon. Monday night was an intense study hall. They had the Christian education program and study hall Sunday night. They had study hall Tuesday night. Wednesday night, Mrs. Earp had a different kind of program for them. That a lot of times we would sing. She of course played the piano, and then we had they had games that they would play. So they got in at least three or four nights that they actually had study hall.
Yeah,
along with the other activities.
Sounds like it was pretty structured. I mean,
it was structured. during the day when they were at school, obviously you didn't have to worry about that, but when they were here, and it was especially difficult to keep structure when we would have work camps to come in.
Oh, yeah.
And because that disrupted everything. You had that work camp schedule to deal with extra young folks about the same age around.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting.
I'd say so. Say so.
And we had to monitor the dormitories and so forth, mm-hmm. which is usual working with young people.
Uh-huh.
Not, there weren't any major big problems, but just a normal thing that the little shenanigans and the tricks that were pulled and so forth.
Yeah. Just, I guess, normal dorm life.
just like dorm life in college, yeah. really, at the high school level.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well then, I guess let's move, you know, just kind of down the years that you've been here. I guess when you came, who was the director?
Lionel Duff was the director, and he actually signed the six-month agreement along with Benny Dyer, who was the chairman of the County Extension District Board.
Okay.
He signed that, so he was the executive director at that time.
Okay, and then McLean came in.
Mr. McLean was here before.
No, he was before Duff. I always get those confused.
Right.
For some reason. Yeah, because that would have been in the 70s. I guess, what was the campus like?
Oh, okay. When I arrived here in 73, of course, I stayed in Westover, which was where the Human Services Center and the pool was built.
Right.
That's where I lived. And then the up on the hill, that which is now the guest house, was actually a shop.
Uh-huh.
And the floors were, it was like walking up and down hills. They were just big wavy bumps, especially upstairs. And Chuck Bentley did a lot of his maintenance work from that building. This building, of course, was basically the hub of activities for the campus. And then the so-called boys' dormitory was later on, and girls was up on the hill where we have staff members living now. And then way up on top of the hill where the priest building is now, uh-huh. that building was used for daycare. And next to it was a kiln that had been left by the lady that worked here in a pottery program before, and Michael Ware continued working with that until it burned down one uh-huh. night. Across the way here from the bridge, there was the Fireside Industries, and that building is no longer here, but the chimney remains. That's where Una Pigman and her crew did all the weaving. And then the library building, which when I came here, that was not the library. It was Home Economics and Industrial Arts
mm-hmm.
was in that building. And there was not a lot that was happening in the old stone library. It is now the James Dale Learning Center.
So it was pretty much not being
right.
used.
Right. And across the road from it was a house where Chuck Bentley lived, and there was an old storage area behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the building that Mr. Steele lived in, that little apartment, was up there. And there was nothing down around the ball field, although the ball field was used.
Mm-hmm.
I think that pretty much covers all the buildings on campus
okay.
that I can remember. So the ones that had been torn down were Westover and Fireside Industries. And that was also Fireside Industries areas was used at times. When Mrs. Duff had daycare, she did use that sign for daycare.
Okay, yeah, Becky was telling me about that. The daycare.
But mostly the daycare was up where the priest building is now.
Okay. Were there many programs going on at that time?
When I first arrived here, of course, the boarding program was a big thing, taking
right.
care of all those kids. And then Mr. Duff would have work camps that would come in. And even that first year, I remember three or four, and they would bring kids in from, most of them are from the Northeast, from various schools and organizations. They would clean up the campus. They would do painting. They would do some community projects. I remember one in particular after, I believe it was the 75 flood. Yes, it was 1975. The flood hit on the 23rd of May. And I remember that summer they brought in a number of people to help with that, and they were called work camps.
Mm-hmm.
Some other programs that happened as a result of incidents like the flood was that a Red Cross Center was set up here. Almost always in December, this organization helped with, along with the fire department and the telephone companies, to do like a Toys for Tots program.
Mm-hmm.
We would have occasional visitors here. They would come as groups, and I can't remember the names of those groups, but we'd probably have a couple of those each month.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, there was some festival activities. I dug back through my records, and I know there was a music festival that was held here at one time. It was called the Southeast Kentucky Music Festival, and it was a whole variety of bluegrass music. I think the JCs and maybe Douglas Duff was in charge of that. Some other programs that I can remember would be, I know that there would be projects work directly with the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Where that people would go out, would come here and stay, and we'll do a project in the school. I remember one time there was a group that came here and actually worked with Una Pigman.
Okay.
And they helped her with her weaving activities.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a girls' school, and I've long since forgotten the name of that school. That's pretty much what I can remember as far as special programs. There was always programs at Thanksgiving and Christmas. Not anything like we do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't necessarily for the settlement staff as such, but it was for the fire department. They'd have their Christmas dinners here, Thanksgiving dinners here. There'd be special community programs.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after I got here, actually within just a few months, the plans began to be laid for the bicentennial. So
okay.
There's a lot of activities here related to the bicentennial.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there was a lot for the community, kind of.
It was a lot of community type things, and in a lot of cases the settlement school was like the host.
Uh-huh.
Providing the facility and not necessarily a whole lot of staff to run it.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever the community leaders were would be doing the program, it'd be doing it here.
Okay.
And an example would be when we worked together for the Bicentennial Project.
Okay. I guess the next thing I want to get into is the latter part of the 70s, after my dad came.
Okay.
Because it kind of had a new director and there were changes and things. I guess, what kind of changes did you see, or maybe there might have even been changes? I know that your job has changed over the year,
right.
Your responsibilities. So let's talk about that, because that's something that I know Jets is really interested in finding out.
Okay.
Kind of your role changing over the years, along with maybe my dad coming and
okay.
The campus changing.
Okay, one of the first things, of course, that Mike was faced with when he first came here was that first winter. It was horrendous. It was a constant battle almost daily, just to from broken water pipes to over in the main, even in the main ball field, to frozen water pipes in the apartments and the dormitories. It was just a big mess. To be honest, things were in pretty sad state of repairs. And I remember, I guess, within a couple of months after Mike got here, that he had a meeting with all of us, and He said one of the things he saw as a need was to start developing some leadership and responsibility for given areas of the campus or whatever with staff members. And we evaluated all the buildings, including the dormitories, and he came by and inspected all of them and saw what the needs were. And I'm sure that list must have been a long list, because there were just so many needs. Some of the things we began to do that from probably some different things that I did in my role here was that there was lots of painting needed to be done. And when it got so bad that virtually everything was shut down, we would paint buildings. We'd start with one apartment or one building or whatever and just work with it until we got it in fairly decent order.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the focus, because when it was that bad, the students were home. There was no school.
Yeah.
And there was days and days and days of that. And some of the things that changed rather rapidly was that board meetings were held here on campus, which was a new experience, because I think before they must have been held in Lexington or somewhere, because I usually wrote reports for those, but I didn't attend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As far as my role as 4-H agent, by that time, integrated programs in the school were increasing, and there were a lot more demands on my time.
Mm-hmm.
As far as that was concerned. And about the time that Mike arrived, the boarding program was beginning to decline dramatically. I can't remember, maybe we might have had a dozen or so students,
mm-hmm.
between 12 and 17 students at the most that were here. And that just got fewer and fewer and fewer as the roads got better, because high school students didn't want to stay here, because that meant they had to study hall every night, they had to wash dishes, they had to clean the rooms,
yeah.
and all this. And so it wasn't exactly, if they had an option, they didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So gradually the boarding program just phased out itself. Work on the buildings here was, I guess, the real big push to try to make the infrastructure a little bit more sound. And then the beginning of things like the Folk Week and Writers Workshops, and in the summertime, the very first beginnings of the Summer Dyslexic School Program,
mm-hmm.
were some of the things that really stick out in my mind. My role as extension agent changed, actually, as needs of youth changed. Because when you took the climate for children in the early 70s, it changed dramatically,
mm-hmm.
from the 80s. And you don't have a choice. You either have to change or you become ineffective.
Right.
And I mean, I could talk for ages about changes there. I try to focus basically on changes here is that once the students weren't here, that meant that some time was freed up for other things on campus. And one of the things that did happen, or a couple of things that happened, was the First Baptist Church burned down in 79.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to start having church services here. The evening services were held here, the morning services at the high school. And that added to my duties of supervision here,
right.
with using the facilities and seeing they were cleaned, set up. The other thing was just trying to keep watch on the campus with so many people coming and going, is that one of my roles with my position here was to help keep track of all that.
Right. And it's kind of always been that way for you, if not officially. Mm-hmm. You've always kind of been a person that I know that anyone could call
mm-hmm.
because you know what's going on. And
right.
I think that's very important because that's not a title that someone gives you. You know, they don't say, this is Jim, and he makes
no.
sure he knows where everybody is.
No.
So I think that's important, you know, that we include that in this, that you have always, as long as I've been here for
mm-hmm.
22 years, the person that you could call at any point to, you know, check out something, make sure the water was running. I mean, what's that kind of like for you?
Well,
is that a burden or?
Not necessarily a burden. I could definitely, it could be a frustrating thing at times.
Right.
I know when we had so much sub-zero weather that you constantly go from building to building just to see, because we were trying to protect the plumbing.
Uh-huh.
And you'd try to keep the water dripping enough to do that. You weren't always successful.
Right.
We had one building, I guess it was a building across the street there, and it probably was the one next to where Chuck lived, that during Christmas break was when all the water lines broke.
Mm.
And it was just like a Christmas wonderland in the building. And I know one year I was trying to watch my own apartment. I guess that was after Michael had moved out and got married, but one morning I was eating breakfast and all of a sudden the stream of water just stopped and it was frozen the whole spring, so
oh
that whole
goodness.
Hillside was frozen
oh.
with ice. I've always felt like my family, when I was raised on the farm, is that we always had chores, we always had duties, so and my mom and dad explained to me that, well, if you live here, then you should be contributing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's more or less the philosophy that I've maintained here, that when I'm here, I feel that I've got a responsibility to be a part of the team and to help where I can.
Right.
So in essence, that's some of the frustrations. Well, some of the joys would be getting to meet some of the people I've met in just coordinating buildings and facilities here. I've met some very, very important people.
Right.
That have traveled from even foreign countries to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And with them, some amusing incidents. There was a wedding here once, and I had been to a meeting in Louisville and got home at like 12:30 in the morning. I think I was living in the Stuckey building at that time. And I brought my bags in and settled down in my apartment. And around, well, it hadn't been 10 minutes. And there was a little peck on the door. and there was a lady outside. And I thought, well, she was in the shower and had locked herself out. But she had been. But she locked herself out of her room. And she had been locked out of her room. She was here all by herself.
Oh, no.
And she had been locked out all evening long.
Oh, gosh.
And I never will forget her first words, because she spoke with a very distinct British accent.
Uh-huh.
And saying that she had locked herself out of her room and she thought she was, and there was no phone.
No.
No way to call anyone.
Oh, it's terrible.
And I think it was for Diane Cornett's wedding, to best of my knowledge, that when she was here.
Mm-hmm.
And she was probably a relative of Diane's husband.
So you've had to deal with a little bit of everything, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've
in your
had
time
to deal
here.
With sickness.
Mm-hmm.
We've had kids got very, very sick here. And one time when about 2/3 of them got down with the flu, was really, and they were all in their beds, they couldn't even get them home.
Right.
So
y'all just took care of them.
We just about had to take care of them, which was sort of carried over from an earlier time when the Stuckey building was used as a hospital.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's hundreds of other instances, but I can't think of them right now.
Right.
to say the least, it's not been boring. And there are different challenges that have happened along the way to make it interesting. We've had, relating back to that flood in May 23rd, 75, I was stranded at Emelina. I was down there doing camp promotion. And finally got back home early that evening. And when I got up to the apartments, it was like it was raining on the inside of the apartments. They were leaking so bad.
Oh, gosh.
And Michael was running around putting out styrofoam cups to try to collect the water.
Yeah.
And we were mopping, and they had all the throw rugs and everything had to be out on the handrail because we'd had over 7 inches of rain in about an hour, and it was just a mess.
I'd say so.
And cleaning up Mrs. Earp's house after flooding was interesting. We went through that a few times.
Oh, I know.
And helping to move her things.
Yeah.
Of course, she was a delight to work with, not only from a standpoint of like being a Christian mentor, but her ability to work with people is really, really an amazing thing.
Okay, and I guess the other main thing I want to talk to you about, probably the last thing we'll get to today, but I guess just tell us a little bit now what you do with your job now, what some of your duties are.
How it's changed.
Yeah, because we're moving into, you know, the next century.
Uh-huh.
What do you do? Because I know that, as you said, there are no more students here on the campus.
Right.
And so you work as a 4-H extension officer. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you do on a day-to-day basis?
Now? Mm-hmm. Okay, the big change that happened, and this happened shortly after Mike came, was that computers came into my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant a whole new ball game at the office. And because of the working with computers, my way of work has changed a lot. Here at the settlement school, some of the changes that have happened working toward the new century, of course, obviously computers are playing a big role in that, and whereas it was extremely limited before, now it's major. I mean, now there's one on my desk that I'd work with almost every day in preparing reports. We had to get publications from university and brought them in. Now we virtually do everything in the office.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn all those computer skills. And as programming increased here on the Settlement School campus, some of my things that relate back to youth developed with Dr. Schenck coming here and seeing the need for environmental education. And we started right after Mike came to develop the Nature Trail. And that's been a long journey with some stuff still we're working on constantly, as providing an educational resource for people from church groups, Girl Scout groups, environmental emphasis groups with 4-H from schools, and then also working with just tours of the campus,
mm-hmm.
dealing with campus history, preparing for the Knott County history book that we developed, and then most recently working with Community Development Initiative. Some of the things that happened with the newer time was to record board meetings. Michael did it before.
Right.
And then I sort of inherited that. And then even recording just recently the CDI meetings,
mm-hmm.
the public meetings. So I've acted as using my technical skills with electronics and recording meetings, whether it be by audio or even video. I know we've got some videos here that I've done of Christmas programs and other special activities. I know there's recordings that I'm sure that's on file somewhere of the early folk weeks,
mm-hmm.
of audio recordings that were done of their concerts and activities. I've also served in the role of meeting and greeting people from DAR school tours, bus tours, University of Kentucky tours, Eastern Kentucky University tours. We've had people come over from Alistair College. I can't even begin to mention the groups of people on campus.
Yeah, there's been a lot.
But in the latter years, say in the last 10 years, that kind of thing has gotten a lot larger than in the past because mm-hmm. as needs developed.
Right.
So my role has changed from being, I guess, a dormitory father figure to a little bit more technical, where that I was assisting with making recordings of historically important meetings, to dealing with people as their host and answering their questions. And even on weekends, I might be going to the post office or to my office, and there'd be up comes a car, and then all of a sudden your schedule changes, and you've got people here that they're traveling through from all across the country, and they start asking questions, and they want a little mini tour.
Yeah.
So over the years, I develop a routine, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
of what that would be like.
Okay.
And telling them what the early years were like, the changes, and then what it's like now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've met some really interesting people.
Oh, I'd say so.
Even once I met recently, within a couple of years, I met a buddy of Mr. Steele that was in the war with him.
Uh-huh.
And one Sunday afternoon, I was going to check out Mrs. Earp's house to see if everything was okay. And they had dropped by just to see the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to meet with him.
That's always neat, to meet new people, I think.
Right. And what I see probably right now, as far as my association with here, I'm continuing to work on the campus,
mm-hmm.
and I live here. As far as youth work changing, we're now where that the demand is so big that we have hired a program assistant to help with programming that relates back to the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Our paraprofessionals that work with nutrition education, they do programming that we didn't do before. We're now working with kindergarten and fourth grade, catching the very youngest and then the fourth graders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a part of 4-H programming. And then just the demand of trying to provide for needs of youth in the late 90s is, I can't even conceive, or I couldn't conceive when I came here, what I'd be doing now, or what
right.
I have to deal with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the technology I have to know, working with electronic stuff, computers, what used to be done at the University of Kentucky as far as designing a publication, I can sit down within an hour in my computer and turn it out, print it, and duplicate it.
Right.
So that is a scope of the change from 73 to 99.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a big one.
Yes, and also too, that also throws more responsibility on our shoulders,
mm-hmm.
For doing it. But on the other hand, it means that when a need comes up in the community that may be totally unique, that we can meet that need,
mm-hmm.
and we can meet it a lot quicker than if we have someone somewhere else to do it for us. I cherish my association here over these years because people I've met have enriched my life beyond anything that I could think of in any other situation. I don't know, I can't think of another place I could have been where I would have met people that are actually really big in the music industry and the folk history and tales. I don't know of another place in this world that I could have met
mm-hmm.
people of that caliber. And that being aside from work, but actually in a sense it does affect work, because when you are enriched by an experience, it automatically becomes a part of what you do
right.
in your daily work. So I think that's pretty much what I can think of that I know we're facing now, dealing with, instead of going from the spirit duplicator to the computer, and then now, starting this month, all my reporting is going to be on the web, the World Wide Web.
It's amazing. I'm going to have to stop this. It's